Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, I'm joined in the studio by the Minister for Enterprise, Tourism and Employment and Fine Gael TD for Longford Westmeath, Peter Burke. You're very welcome. Thanks for coming in. I just want to start with your response to the RTE Investigates programme, which was on last night about those two Emise-run nursing homes in Portlaoise and Glasnevin. We were just talking about it before the break. It was really distressing to watch. What did you make of it and what's been said this morning?
I think it was very distressing to see vulnerable people to be treated the way they were. And when you consider elderly people who have given so much for our economy, for our state, to be treated like that in their twilight years was absolutely reprehensible. I would say that we really do need answers from the chief investigator to see exactly what has went on
in
here.
In Hickwa.
Absolutely, to see what has went on here and to establish the clear facts of where the investigation is at. I know a report is currently being worked upon by Hickwa, but we do really need to see urgency here because, you know, we've had a past over the last number of years. I remember my colleague Fergus O'Dowd did a huge amount of work in this sector over the last decade and beyond, and to see that what happened over the last number of weeks at both these nursing homes is absolutely disgraceful.
Your colleague, Minister Kieran O'Donnell, said this morning that 80% of nursing homes are compliant, according to Hickwa. Do you accept that? Do you think people will accept that?
I think he said 87% of nursing homes are inspected at least once a year and are compliant, and others are inspected more. But critically here, Claire, is first of all, Hickwa have the power to close down a nursing home. They have the regulatory framework to take action.
But
so we need to see exactly now what has
problem.
Happened. Irrespective of where the people go, the state has to respond to that. If people are not being cared for appropriately, with dignity, with respect in an institution, well then that institution should not be operating. That's critical, and Hickwa need to really enforce that and to ensure that everyone has a basic level of dignity and care that they deserve in their twilight years.
In the immediate term though, what do you think should happen?
Well, first of all, we need to get to the bottom of the facts with Hickwa. Exactly what's going to happen from the chief investigator. I know Minister O'Donnell has met with Hickwa. He spoke to Bernard Gloucester last night, who is the chief executive of the HSE. And it's critical that we work with Minister O'Donnell to get answers here and that this activity is not happening right now. That's the most important thing, that all the families for those residents have an assurance that this activity is not happening now. This level of care, which fell well below what you would expect in an institution like this.
See, we were promised after Lee's Cross that we wouldn't see this again, and that's why Hickwa was set up. And here we are, back in pretty much exactly the same position.
Absolutely, and that's why we do need a response in terms of from the regulator to firstly to establish exactly why this institution or institutions have their licence at this point in time, considering that there are open investigations on them. We need to see what finding of determination was made in those investigations, and we need to ensure that families that have so many vulnerable residents in these institutions have an assurance that this is not going to happen again.
Now let's move to your own brief and the EU Trade Commissioner Maros Sefcovic saying just yesterday that rapid progress was being made in this latest round of talks with the Americans. What does that mean? Do you know what he means there? What's going on?
Well, first of all, Maros Sefcovic had a meeting with Jemison Guerra at the World Trade Organization, or not, the OECD conference in Paris on Wednesday. And obviously, he's working to try and get an agreement. There's been a lot of papers shared between the US and the EU, trying to get a pathway to ensure a best case scenario whereby we would have some element of zero tariffs, which would be most preferable for the EU. But that is going to be a challenge. And one of the concerns we see is that in relation to the deal that the UK got, obviously a 10% tariff was embedded in that deal. And other countries seem to be going in that trajectory. So there's a very significant challenge ahead. We're responding in four ways. Obviously, negotiation is key with Maros as head of the Trade Commission. Secondly, we're working with our clients. We have about 970 clients with Enterprise Ireland, employ 68,000 people exporting to the US. We're working with them in trying to hive out additional productivity in the export markets, and also working with diversifying their markets and reviewing the terms and conditions of their contracts, and also the country of origin principle. So in other words, what way a tariff would impact on their product.
So is the aim now, because we know at the beginning it was zero for zero, that's what the EU wanted. Are you saying now that we'd be happy with 10%?
Absolutely not. We don't want any tariff. That would be the challenge, is to get a zero for zero is a very significant mountain to climb. And that's where we want to be, quite frankly, because we're very clear that we have the most integrated trading relationship with the US. We see that we are responsible for, in a European context, 2/3 of all foreign direct investment in the heart of the US economy. And we have proven how much trade matters. And to the US, you know, you see the increase in steel and aluminium. The US imports about 1/4 of its steel, over half of its aluminium. And that's going to impact significantly in prices in their domestic economy, because tariffs constrain supply to increase inflation. And really, the US citizens will be impacted significantly. Mm. But also in our context, Europe will be significantly impacted. And we know, in terms of our relationship, the critical, most important relationship is the US one in terms of trade, and because we have so many foreign direct investors here, which are critical to it.
I mean, Donald Trump was extremely frustrated with the EU the last time he made any public comments specifically about the EU, saying that the talks were going nowhere. Well, what was going on there?
Well, obviously, we have to work through the frustrations that the US administration have with the EU. And we do know that they deem some of the regulatory burdens that are currently placed upon digital services, that are placed upon regulation, they deem them as non-tariff barriers. Mm-hmm. And that's where the reciprocal tariff came from. They put a monetary value on what they deem barriers to the EU. But with the new commission, we've worked very closely with trying to simplify European regulation. President von der Leyen has been very clear, simpler, faster, lighter is now the approach. We're on our fourth omnibus piece of legislation, trying to ensure that, you know, our SMEs and all who integrate and operate with Europe are doing so with proportionate regulation, and really trying to incentivise innovation. And hopefully through those negotiations, Mrosch and his team can point out what the EU is doing, trying to ensure we're doing things faster, also trying to ensure that we are working closer with the US, because we know and we've proven that trade really lifts all boats. It's one of the key things that, you know, tariffs are back in 1930s thinking. We need to be forward thinking and have an integrated economy on both sides of the Atlantic.
I suppose, though, part of your job is to protect Irish business in all of this, while the competency for the negotiation is with Mara Sefcovic, as you say, and you've set up this cost of business forum. Now, the aim of that, I know, is to drive down business costs. But we see grocery prices are going up by nearly 5% in May compared to the same time last year. People will just be wondering, how long will it take for you to get on top of this? Because I noticed that they're going to issue a report in 2026, the forum.
Well, first of all, we have established a small business unit already. We've taken a number of decisions already to make businesses viable, to enhance their capacity. We're coming forward with our competitive action plan in July. That's been fast-tracked. We've taken a number of actions over the last 2 months to try and ensure businesses are more efficient, are operating at a more competitive manner, and we'll continue to do that. And I see a huge amount of opportunity in the Irish economy, because over the last year, we've put an extra 90,000 jobs into our country. That's 90,000 families with an additional income, and that gives you the opportunity to raise living standards, because a job is the most important route to success for families.
But this cost of business forum, how long is it going to take before we see action?
Yeah, so what we're looking at in the business forum is looking at regulation principally in terms of the state, how we can do things faster, simpler, to ensure that we have proportionate regulation. We're embarking upon a digital transition in terms of sustainability as well, and we need to have all those supports that are getting into businesses. But there are huge opportunities, and one of the areas we're really focusing on as well is semiconductors. We launched our semiconductor plan over a week ago, which I think is going to be very significant for the Irish economy. It's a sector that has 22,000 people employed in it, 13.5 billion worth of exports, and 130 companies. And
so what is it? We want to make more of them here.
Absolutely. And if you look at right through COVID, you know, where manufacturing was stopped almost in a number of areas because of lack of chips. And we know from fridges, cars, phones, chips are everywhere. In Ireland, we have so much of the building blocks for that sector. I'll be bringing a very exciting proposal to Cabinet in a number of weeks about our next generation sites, which will be utility rich, over 1,000 acres, to attract, you know, the next analog devices or Intel of the future, get our new foundry or fabrication unit, our packaging facility, to ensure that we can really bring more jobs into that sector. And it's about closing the loop between our SMEs and our multinationals, because looking at some of those big semiconductor companies, one of them in particular has over 800 SMEs working on their books built into their supply chain management. And that's from Banagher Concrete to Kiernan Steel and Longford. Okay. These are regional jobs
that's
that we
fine.
Can improve
and
a lot
it's
in.
It's fairly high-level stuff, but for most consumers listening to this, I just want to know, when is a pound of butter going to cost less than 4.70?
Well, obviously, you have to try and keep reducing our costs. And that is obviously a big challenge in the current circumstances. But we will do it. And that's what I'm very clear on, that we are reducing the cost base for business. And you will see a number of decisions I've taken over the last number of weeks to enhance their capacity, really to reduce their utilities as well. Because one of the critical things is that to help businesses is not take money off them in the first place. And you'll see through our energy efficiency grants, which I have increased, have had a very significant uptake now because we lowered the conditions attached to them, and helping businesses on their digitalisation journey as well through significant proportion of grants. We have a new national enterprise hub established, over 250 supports on it, again, which intervenes and helps business owners who are, you know, many sitting around their family table, they haven't got a HR department or a finance director. They need support that they can get because time is their most prized resource.
You've difficult choices coming down the tracks though as well, and Una Buckley last week, who's the Secretary General of the Department of the Environment, said that we're going to have to make choices between data centres and housing when it comes to energy capacity. Do you accept that that choice is there?
Absolutely not. I don't agree with the premise that's put forward. First of all, I would say our ICT sector has, at this point in time, 175,000 people employed in it. It exports about a quarter of a trillion euro in computer services. Data centres are intrinsic to that model. Mm-hmm. We have built up a competitive advantage as an agile digital economy, and it's critical, first of all, that we retain and enhance that, which data centres are important for. But secondly, if we're to deliver on our renewable target, we need data centres to really have that demand because they are partnering up with so many renewable generation projects. Look at the Midlands where you have AWS partnering with Bord na Mona. That's going to be a very significant renewable project.
But their
and we have a competitive
demands
advantage here.
Are going up by 22% a year. Like, we cannot keep up with that. No
we
matter
can.
How much you want to, you
Well,
can't.
First of all, what we have to do is we have to chart a plan. Yes, we have constraints now, but if you build out to 2030 and beyond, whereby 2030, we're aiming to have 9 gigawatts of onshore wind, 8 gigawatts of solar and 5 gigawatts of offshore, and building up to offshore potentially over the next two decades to 37 gigawatts. And at that point in time, in the next year and a half, we'll be trebling our interconnectivity capacity, which will be very significant through Brittany and Cork, and also in relation to the UK interconnector, which has now been up and running. And that will give us capacity. But we have a constrained time until we get to that point in time. But if you look at housing,
well,
if we deliver...
So what do we do in that intervening 4 or 5 years? I mean, do you not say we can't do data centres? We can't do more data centres?
No, there is capacity there in different parts of the country. So it's about managing that capacity. It's about signalling to the sector that we have short-term constraints, but we have a huge opportunity in terms of green, clean energy coming down the tracks from the end of this decade and beyond, which are going to be very significant and will enhance our capacity to grow our ICT sector, to have good, high quality jobs, and also that will deliver upon our renewables, because that's the point that people miss, that we need energy demand in our country. If we are going to deliver on all that offshore renewable energy, we need users here, and we want to book that value for Irish state.
Isn't it interesting, though, that the Secretary General of the Department of the Environment doesn't know any of that?
I didn't see the comments or the context of them, but I would say
is
that...
But you know
what
she said.
And hopefully
I'm articulating choices between data centres and housing. You're saying, no, she's wrong. She's running the Department of the Environment.
Well, first of all, the government take decisions. It's the programme for government which we have decided upon to chart Ireland over the next 5 years and beyond is how we deliver government policy. It's the civil services job to carry out that instruction. Mm-hmm. And I would say in terms of housing, if we deliver on, which we want to, 300,000 new houses, that could take up to between 300 and 500 megawatts of electricity. We have that capacity in our country. Yes, there are constraints in certain areas where we need additional substations, but we're working on that through the National Development Plan, which Minister O'Brien will be bringing forward, a very strong plan to resource air grid and ESB networks to ensure that we are future-proofing our economy to take all this huge opportunity that we have. And it's one working with the other, because the data centres will provide the revenue streams for the future to ensure that we can deliver on so much of our capital plan, because it's critical that we realise as a country that all our businesses, all those hardworking SMEs to our multinationals, they're providing the resources that we need to run our country.
Listen, tourism is also in your remit, and I wanted to ask you about short-term lets, this new legislation. When is it going to be brought in? Because we were expecting it in April, weren't we? And then there was pushback. We were heard from the members of Cabinet who wanted the size of the towns that would be exempt from the new rules. They wanted that increased. And then there was a report in one of the papers in the Mail that said there were other members of Cabinet who wouldn't allow you to put it before Cabinet at that time.
Well, all of that is incorrect. And genuinely, I say that it's extremely exaggerated. The reason it didn't go before Cabinet was that I principally was not happy that the memo wasn't complete. And that was just a key for my standards, because I am very clinical in ensuring that everything that goes before Cabinet that I'm happy with. And it only took a week. We got additional issues into the memo that I wasn't happy with at that point in time. What we're doing here is my job is to essentially set up Fáilte Ireland as a competent authority which will list all our short-term lets. Mm-hmm. We will get additional data for our tourism sector which will enhance us in making policy decisions, which is very important because we have a sector right now that's growing 10% per annum and we really haven't got the data to really enhance the policy choices that we need in the years ahead.
We know Norma Foley and Michael Healy-Ray, they want the bigger towns like Killarney left out of this. What's your view?
In the first instance, we will be going through pre-legislative scrutiny. In the memorandum that we have taken, 10,000 is the limit that is currently set out. Government is open to working with all interested parties, and that's the key thing what pre-legislative scrutiny does. It brings in all the witnesses.
What's your view on it? Is 10,000...
I think it's a reasonable start, but I would be open. I would be open to working with individuals, witnesses in the sector who have, you know, really skin in the game and are working hard to deliver our tourism product, and also working hard that we know as a government that our number one priority exclusively is housing, and we have to ensure that government is pulling every single lever at its disposal to deliver as many houses as possible. I'm making a contribution through our short-term lets which will deliver into the housing sector. I'm also making a significant contribution through modern methods of construction, which we have our Centre of Excellence in Galway, and that almost all of our big operators are using MNC
like
in some shape
for,
or form.
For Killarney to be exempt from this short-term let.
We'll work through the process. I don't want to predetermine decisions when we haven't heard from witnesses, and we'll go through the legislative process and take people's views on board. But it is critical that we ensure as many housing units come in, but also getting the balance that we protect our rural tourism as well.
Peter Burke, thank you for coming in. We'll take a break.